Whipped in by Jalanoglu. Terrific header. Bakayoko's first goal for Milan comes in the derby and gives them hope.
What a great header this is from Bakayoko. I think he's had a decent game. Probably been Milan's best player.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. I'm joined once again by Anthony.
What's up, guys? I'm your co-host, also known as that dumb American who doesn't know anything on the pod. Anthony Torgard. You can find me on Twitter at Torgard45. And we are joined once again as well by the birthday boy today, Madison. How are you?
Happy birthday, mate.
Thank you. I am doing pretty well. Are you known as the American who doesn't do anything? I've not heard that unless people were giving you shit on Twitter.
Yeah, but you guys just one person.
Oh, well that, okay. Mm. Well, you guys can go ahead and follow me on Twitter at Madison_DT.
Yeah, and just before we get started, a reminder that this show is brought to you by our friends over at Euro Fantasy League. So if you haven't already, make sure to check out our Serie A Fantasy League, which you can find out more details about on our Twitter page. And just a quick plug at the start of the podcast, if you could all vote for us in the 2019 Football Blogging Awards, which are going on over in the UK in a couple of months' time, then that would be good. You can find out more details about that via our pinned tweet. So, yeah, right, let's get into it. I mean, it's Maddie's birthday. We've all got a beer, partially celebrating, you know, birthday wishes and all that, but also commiserating after a pretty bad result last night. Sunday night, the Derby della Madonnina was played at San Siro between Milan and Inter. I think it'd be fair to say we went into this game as favourites based on form, but it's a derby, so form goes out the window. Inter twice led by two goals, and twice we pulled it back to a one-goal lead. Bakayoko and Musacchio got the goals for us, but it wasn't to be enough. AJ, all the expectation leading into this game, and once again, we just didn't really deliver.
Yeah, I think we started off on the wrong foot. I mean, obviously, they scored in the second minute, and that really set the tone. We were shut out in the first half, really the first hour, honestly. We had the first goal was Bakayoko's. That was fantastic to see, you know, pounding the badge afterwards. Came out today that he was telling everyone all week and weeks prior that he was going to score against Inter. When he did, I guess everyone on the bench said, you know, he told us he'd do it. So that's awesome. Love to see that there. Mm-hmm. Second goal we got was a tap in from Musacchio, which started actually with a Suso cross that was then deflected to Musacchio's feet. So he could give him like a half assist, you know, but so that was cool. And then there was some dubious penalty. I firmly believe that it wouldn't have been called had the referee not have been split down. I think he was just embarrassed by that and had to call it. I mean, he was looking at the sky. He was flat on his ass. There's no way he could have saw the challenge whatsoever. So the fact he called it and didn't review it was a little interesting to me. Not saying it wasn't a penalty, it could have been, but I mean, how do you not review that in a situation like that? Personal opinion. So,
Yeah. Maddie, what do you think?
On the penalty call or the game in general?
Game in general and the penalty call, you know, was that kind of like the defining moment given that it was the winning goal?
I think the defining moment was in the second minute when Inter scored so fast. I think that caught the entire AC Milan defense off guard, because our defense has been so strong the entire, I guess, since really the middle of December. We've had such a strong defense, and I was not expecting Inter to score that fast or score as many goals as they did. I think I said last week that I'd be surprised if they scored more than one goal, and they scored three. So I was clearly wrong on that. I think that the first half for us, we were just awful. I think players were playing out of position. Çalhanoğlu was kind of floating around the entire offensive half of the field. Once he took his shot, it kind of looked like he had some confidence, so he started to explore a little bit. And he was also covering for Paqueta on defense. So I think the team was just kind of scrambling to try and get control of the game and never really got control of the game. As far as Bakayoko's goal, I was so happy. I've been talking to you guys for like the last 6 months about how I just want him to score so bad. And to be able to score in the Derby, I think, is awesome. He's my favorite Milan player right now, so I was very happy for him. And Musacchio's goal was great. I think that all of their goals were pretty avoidable except for their last one. I think that they caught our defense off because we were pressing so high up the field. But I think it was just a bad performance from us. I think that we took them for granted because they had just gotten knocked out of the Champions League. But they, you know, came with fire under their ass, and they really showed us that we were underestimating them.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Gattuso said after the game, he said in his press conference that the game that he saw was basically Inter v Eintracht Frankfurt, which was the Europa League game the Thursday before where Inter got knocked out of the Europa League. He saw that game, but with Milan playing as Inter. I thought going into this game, I know they say that form goes out of the window and everything like that, but the two sides were so contrasting going into it that you think that has to be playing on the players' mind.
Right.
They didn't have Icardi, they didn't have Nainggolan, you know, they're missing two star players. Everything was stacked in our favour. I thought to myself, even though I said to you boys, and I did say to you boys all the way up until the game, we won't win this. We'll find a way to mess up our best chance to win a league derby in years. I thought the only thing that could be our undoing was basically stage fright. And the only thing that could massively contribute to that is an early goal. And that's exactly what happened. So, third minute, cross goes over to the far post, headed back across. Vecino with a, I would say it's a pretty acrobatic finish, but he couldn't really miss from there. And all of a sudden, the mood inside the stadium changes. What Gattuso will have wanted his team to go out there and do, playing a 4-3-3, playing the usual system with the usual setup, usual players pressing the usual areas. You want everything to sort of be how it's been over the last few weeks. Keep us in our rhythm, keep us on the front foot. And that just completely knocks you off guard. And what that then allowed Spalletti to do was just to sit back a little bit more and to tell Inter to frustrate us. And we kept losing the ball in bad areas. We caught too many times with too many players committed forward. Too many times Kessier and Paqueta got caught in transition. Fullbacks were caught out of position. You had thought Ricardo Rodriguez had a poor game. And I think for the third derby in Serie A in a row, Gattuso was outcoached. And I don't know about you, AJ, but I think we should be pretty worried about that. I mean, obviously, he's growing with experiences, Gattuso, as a manager. And these big games will tell him more than the games against Cagliari that we win 3-0, for example. But, you know, he's learning the hard way.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, three in a row. The last one that he won was in the Coppa Italia, so really he hasn't won any in Serie A against him. In fact, he's had two losses and a draw. It's been tough. We haven't been able to beat this team in quite some time in the league. I think just the most recent one I could think of was the 3-0 with Mihaljevic.
Yeah, 2016, that was.
Which is just...
That was...
So long ago.
The week before this website started.
Yeah. And, I mean, that just goes to show you how long ago that was. We didn't exist then.
Yeah, man.
But...
Well, that means one thing. We have to close down the website.
That's the only way.
You know what? I was just about to say that.
That's the only way. Matty, you're fired. Happy birthday.
Yeah. Sweet.
But, yeah, it's... You know, it's a tough draw. I think, we were really good to bounce back. Yes, we wilted immediately after the third-minute goal, but I do think we fought back. We didn't give up like we have in previous years. You know, we kept fighting. Even if it wasn't our best performance throughout, we still kept trying to claw back. And to our credit, the resilience paid off, and we did pull back two goals. It's just unfortunate that each time we got one, they pulled another one on top of us, you know what I mean? We were really close to an equalizer twice late in the game with Cutrone and Castillejo from crosses there. You know, I just believe that we could have won that. It's just, it is what it is. But we shouldn't hang our heads low. Yes, it's the biggest game of the season for us, but that's one loss in our last 10 games, you know, or two losses in the last 11 straight or something like that. First one of 2019, there's no reason to hang our head low. we're not out of danger yet. If you look at the next upcoming games, it's actually, I know most people aren't going to say this makes sense immediately, but it's beneficial for us to have Inter beat Lazio in the next match week, because then we play Juve right after. So if we could knock down Lazio and keep Roma at bay, then, you know, we're in good shape. But there's still a lot of season left. You know, there's still 30 points to play for. Anything could happen. We just can't let this one loss defeat us.
Yeah, and to be honest, I mean, was Gattuso out-coached? Maybe. I think, you as a coach, you can only do so much. As soon as that whistle blows, you have very minimal control over what goes on in the game besides substitutions. Like you can tell the players to do certain things, and they can do their best to listen, but literally everything that happens in the match is all situational. So, I mean, I don't want to say that it's Gattuso's fault that we lost, because he wasn't the ones on the players need to take fault for the loss, because they looked like they did not know what we were doing. In the previous 10 games, the players have not looked like that. So it's clearly not Gattuso's tactics for the reason why we lost. Well, there's,
I personally don't think we've looked that hot, really, since beating Napoli, you know, in the Coppa Italia. We've just been lucky enough to pull it off against some weaker sides in the second half. But you're right. You know, Gattuso obviously isn't playing. He really doesn't have control over that, but there are things he can do, and there was a lot of things he was doing that were reactionary as opposed to proactive. You know, he wasn't he didn't go in there with the, well, it's hard to say, I'm not there, I don't know what his game plan was, but it seemed like, and because we conceded so early, everything since then he had to react to what was going on. And to his credit, he did try to go for the win, you know, subbing on a second striker for Rodriguez, who really had a poor game, honestly. I mean, this was one of his worst showings since the Super Cup when Juve thumped us there. You know, I think he looked really bad.
But he had a cover for Paqueta, who was not coming back on defense.
Right, and to Gattuso's credit, he took him off at halftime.
Right, and I thought that was injured. A great sub. He was also injured, okay. You're right.
I mean, Gattuso said after the game that he had his hand forced a little bit in the, you know, the substitutions seemed like a bit random and a bit all over the place, but he felt like he had to make those changes, and I think that Paqueta coming off at half-time injured kind of threw his approach plan for the second half out of the window.
Because that's one thing Gattuso's been good at lately, is we have a poor first half, and at halftime he's able to make the proper adjustments, so we didn't see that here. We saw more kind of like things that he was forced to do, as you're saying. So that would make sense to me if that was the case.
Yeah, it was one of those. I mean, you talked about it there. It's a game of fine margins, though, yet again, where Katrona's shot at the end there seemed destined to be going in, and I was like half up out of my seat, ready to celebrate the goal. It was a fantastic block, don't get me wrong, and then they showed the replay in slow motion, and it like rattles between his legs, D'Ambrosio's legs, and away. And you just think, oh, if that goes in, man, you know.
Yeah, I mean, if his legs were an inch wider, you know, he goes straight in goal.
Speaking of legs being wide, the ref, I haven't really seen this talked about loads. It has been mentioned a bit. I think Marco Guida, the ref, had a really poor game.
God awful.
Really poor
God
game.
Awful. On both sides.
He just didn't. He was too quick with his yellow cards. He just didn't let the game flow at all. He gave a red card to Conti that was just never in a million years a red
card. See, I thought it was.
It looked rough in real time, but you can see that the leg that he goes in up is completely out of the way, and the bottom leg goes through, but there's nothing that's use of excessive force in that. And I think they came to the right call on that. But the worst thing for me was the penalty. If that's now a penalty, I just don't know what defender. I mean, I know it was Castellano, but I don't know what defenders in that situation are meant to do, because they showed the replay. First of all, was it Politano who got fouled? I think it was Politano. He was turning away from goal. His touch was outside the box. Yes, if there was any contact, which I don't think there was, then it was inside the box. However, it's a classic case, if there was contact, of an attacker dangling out a leg and looking for that contact. I just really do not think it was a penalty at all.
Yeah, it was never a penalty. And the part about it that upsets me the most is that VAR was not utilized. And I think that's solely because the ref was embarrassed. He was upset because he got split like a fucking banana. And there's no way he saw the challenge because he was on his own ass. And so when he just pointed to the spot, it was purely out of spite for himself. He didn't want to look like a fool. And I don't know if he had the people in his ear saying, hey, my own review that made that was the wrong call. But if they were, he was very adamant saying, no, we're going with this. And I seriously think it was pride for him, ego, which is a very common thing in Serie A referees. I mean, now we're going into conspiracies, but I feel like every Serie A referee is just god-awful and cares more about themselves than anything else.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. I just don't understand how such a big call in the game like that, where we just scored to get it back to 2-1, the momentum was with us.
Oh, yeah.
I think that with 40 minutes left in the game, wait, hang on, 35 minutes left in the game after Bakayoko had scored, I think if we score the equaliser, we go on and win that.
I agree. Potentially. Yeah, if that
That's
penalty
what
never
does in football.
If that penalty never happened, I bet we could have won, or at the very least, we would have been 2-2 final score, you know. And
how many times has that happened in the exactly. derby recently, where it's been 2-0 and it's come back to 2-2?
And I don't. I think in a game like this, where it's a derby game, it's between third and fourth place. You always need to review the penalty kick.
Too much
if you have the ability.
Yeah. You got to let him play, you know. And to Donnarumma's credit, he was real close to saving that. Ultimately, he was caught
on
the wrong foot. Lautaro Martinez, most of his penalties go down the middle, so I think that's what he was banking on. But if you see, he takes just a slight bounce to the right of the, or well, I guess to Donnarumma's left, but to the right from the penalty spot, and that's when Lautaro makes it a shot to the other side, and he barely, if you look in slow motion, I mean, he's millimeters away from getting a fingertip to it. So credit to Gigio, he's stepped up. Even if he didn't save it, I think he did pretty solid on that to be close to it. It's
I think he definitely, he was like fingernails away.
Yeah.
And I don't think he had a terrible game. I think the first goal he could have done a little bit better on by at least getting a hand to it, to punching it away.
Everyone in the 6-yard box could have done better on that first goal.
Yeah.
In my honest opinion, but,
I think they just didn't expect it.
Yeah, I think it was caught.
It's a cross. I mean, you've got to. I don't understand how Perisic is allowed to steal in at the back post and win that header. He's a winger. You know, he's not awful in the air, but how on earth has he been managed to head that back into a dangerous area? And who's watching a central midfielder in Vecino who's making an attacking run? I'm annoyed about that, and I think as we've mentioned, that really set us off on the wrong foot and the nerves kicked in a bit.
Watching that goal right now. It originally was thrown up. Ricardo Rodriguez is very central, but it doesn't go to his man. It goes to Romagnoli's, who Alessio pulls, but because Rodriguez is not central, now they're both kind of on him, which left Vecino open. So, I mean, there's just a lot of lack of communication
there. A
lot
of small errors.
Exactly,
there, yeah.
And they all built up, and that's, yeah. I mean, that's how all goals are scored, just a cluster of things going wrong. But a part of it to me is no one expected to concede in the third minute. When you've conceded 5 goals in all of 2019, you don't expect you're going to shit the bed that early. And, you know, that's testament to Inter, to be honest. To get 3 goals when we've only had 5 all year, you know, that's almost doubled our goal tally. Also, I think Alessio got dribbled past, so he's no longer the only person in Europe.
Yeah, I saw that. I was pretty disappointed. But I think that comes to us underestimating them and not thinking that they'd be able to put 3 goals in our net, because we've been so good this,
right.
You know, 2019.
They've rarely scored 3 goals this
exactly.
season.
Exactly,
right.
I mean, I mentioned on a previous podcast how many games they've won by 1 goal. It's mental. They've won like 70% of their games by 1 goal, maybe 3/4 of their games by 1 goal. I think we're expecting it to be a cagey affair that we would win based on just having that slight edge and having informed players like Piontek, who was actually, unfortunately, for the first time in a Milan shirt, arguably pretty anonymous.
I don't know about first time. I'd say recently it's happened 2 or 3 times, honestly.
But he scored goals in those games.
No. First two that he didn't score, I felt like he didn't do anything. And I could be wrong in that. I could just be bitter right now. But
you know, last week we were talking with Matt about Piontek, and a lot of his goals have come from toe poking the ball in, which comes from being in the right place at the right time. I can only remember like one or two goals where he actually created the play himself and scored. And I don't want to call those goals lucky because they take skill, and we have not had a player to be able to do that for some time. But eventually those goals are going to run out, and you have to start creating your own goals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you're going to get balls serviced to you into the box. But in games like this where those just are not coming, you need to be able to do a little bit more.
I think he came up against a central defensive pairing that knew exactly what they wanted to do with him.
Yep.
De Vrij and Skriniar, don't get me wrong, for me, the second best centre-back pairing in the league. They knew what they wanted to do with him in the sense that if you noticed a lot in the first half when Piontek dropped in a little bit, one of them would follow, and if one of our midfielders tried to play the ball into Piontek, a foot had come through the back, and he got fouled a couple of times. They left a foot in on him. He got up a few times, rubbing his knee or rubbing his ankle, and I think they just nipped away at him. And basically, he just kept going deeper and deeper, not wanting to get, you know, to feel that contact. And then in terms of, you know, getting the ball in dangerous positions, in attacking positions where he's going to score goals, it just didn't really happen because we were getting overrun in midfield, and the shape of the team just wasn't there. And also one thing that I absolutely bemoan us for, and we didn't seem to want to do until the last 20 minutes when we were really pushing for that equaliser, is we didn't seem to want to get the ball out wide, and that is where our danger has always come from. It was only in the last sort of half an hour when we started to see Suso actually come into the game a little bit, and we started to see a few dangerous balls being whipped in. Before that, we were trying to play through the middle too much because we thought that that's where the gap was, but it just didn't seem to be there. I mean, we opened it up for questions on Twitter before we started recording this, and one of them that we've been asked twice now is basically, you know, Castillejo or Suso, or Castillejo, sorry, and Suso. And there's a stat which I tweeted from AC Milan Data, which I know, AJ, you're not particularly happy.
If you could have just saw my animation right now.
Suso before November the 1st in Serie A had 4 goals and 6 assists. And Suso since then has 1 goal and 1 assist. So he's, in terms of productivity, and I appreciate that that's not everything in football, you know, he still tries to get on the ball, and he still tries to be a part of things in overall play. He still registered the most key passes on the team and that kind of thing. But in terms of his actual, you know, on paper output, he's not really had the best second half of the season so far.
Sure, on paper output as far as goals and assists, yes, he's had 1 each since November. But that second goal against Inter would have been an assist for him had it not have been saved, and then it bounced straight to Usakio.
Yeah, but you can say that about any cross that gets cut out and then a goal eventually ends up getting scored.
Right, I mean, it's a chance created. It's still a part of what wingers do. I mean, me personally, a winger is not a goal-scoring machine. I view Hazard as the perfect winger, and he doesn't score many goals or assists. He creates. He moves up the field, and that's what I think a winger should be doing. So that's why I hold Suso in high regard, you know. I think both the own goal against Sassuolo and Cagliari also came from his crosses. One would have been his, but it deflected in. I thought it was unfair to even call it an own goal, to be honest. The other one was originally registered as an assist for him off of Musacchio, but then they later reviewed and said Musacchio didn't hit it. It hit I believe it's Cipitelli for Cagliari. So,
Sure.
I mean, if you want to be real anal about it, like I'm going to be, that's still kind of a Suso assist. It just doesn't count because it was the other team who tapped it in. But I think he's doing a lot more than statistics show. And it's really hard to justify that because so many people use statistics, and rightfully so. They obviously tell a story, but I just think there's a lot more to the story than that. You know, you don't. I can't think of an analogy right now. I've had too many beers today, but I think there's more to it than just that, and I'll leave it there.
I think, though, there's been a bit of a concern about. You're right, there is more to the story than just statistics, but I think that this story is that in recent weeks, he doesn't seem to be as sharp as he was, you know, particularly at the start of the season. He had a red-hot start to the season, but he just doesn't seem as sharp. Seems to be that once again we've reached that stage in the season where teams realise that all they need to do is show him onto his weak foot, and he's not going to beat anyone for pace to the byline.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I would sell him in a heartbeat if the right offer came through. Even the $40 million that's his release clause, I think that's plenty. There's a lot of better wingers out there that can do more. Because like you said, he really is a one-trick pony. It's a matter of when the league figures that out. They seem to do it every year, but not in the first half, which, I don't know, that's weird to me. I don't know if that's a thing or not, but I don't know. I would replace him, but I think he's a fantastic player still.
I would sell him. I mean, I just feel like he is not as useful as we all think he is. Like AJ said, I think he's a one-trick pony, and if you want to be aiming for that next level, you can't have a winger to be a one-trick pony.
Well, you can. And I mean, you look at Robin, one of the best ever.
You can if they're incredible at that one trick, as in, like, the best ever at
sure,
that one trick.
Like
right. Yeah, right. And Suso just looks like, it looks like he's in and out of every game, just mentally. It looks like he's there, then 10 minutes he's not, and then in 10 minutes he is. And I don't know if what's going on. He wants more money. I don't think we should give him more money,
Is that a thing, though? I thought the whole point of renewing it was just to get rid of the release clause.
No, I mean, it's come out today, and it was mentioned before. A few places have reported it that basically Leonardo was the one who wanted to push through the renewal before the end of the season because, A, he was scared that there were clubs that were going to activate the $40 million clause once the transfer window comes around.
Right.
But then it was basically being held up because as part of that, Suso were basically, Suso's entourage or his representatives or whatever were also asking for a pay rise from $4 million. We were offering $4 million a year, and his party want $5 million.
What is he currently at?
That's all. It's a good question. I don't think it's anywhere near that. I'll quickly Google it. But yeah, the recent report is basically saying that we don't think that he's earned it based on his recent performances, and that we're going to hang fire on offering him that. $3 million a year is at the moment. So once a substantial pay rise at $5 million a year. I think we'll end up settling in the middle because if Suso's representatives have anything about them, they must be realizing that his stock's kind of at a low at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that release clause is still going to be tempting for some clubs. I know Arsenal have been linked, but it's.
If he goes to Arsenal, I'll talk as much shit about him as you want me to.
I don't think he will, personally. I don't think he's really a Premier League player, to be honest. I think he could do a little bit better in a La Liga team.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
I think the intensity... I know it's a generalisation overall, but I think the intensity of the Premier League and how much every player at 1 to 11 is involved in the Premier League. Whereas in La Liga, you see players that can sort of drift in and out of games. That's no disrespect to La Liga. It just seems to be a lot more technical a league.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think in the Premier League, it's a bit more chaotic, is a good way to put it, mm-hmm. to where you can't just do one thing. You got to be able to adapt instantly. And when there's chaotic defending like there is in the Premier League, you can't assume that, you cut inside. You can't assume that's going to work. You're always going to have a dude that's just kind of like lying there or something, And at that point, Suso would be lost. He obviously never got into the Liverpool squad. Granted, he didn't get into our squad immediately either. But I think you're right. I don't think he would do well in the Premier League. And I think like a club like a Villarreal or a Sevilla would fit him perfectly.
Atletico Madrid have been mentioned, which been I couldn't see him starting there because obviously they've got loads of good forwards, but you know, he'd be pretty good for somewhere like that, I think. And interestingly, just as a point of reference, obviously Gerard Deulofeu, when he played for Milan, a lot of people sort of saw him as a breath of fresh air because he was running all over the place. He wasn't frightened to take on defenders, wasn't frightened to shoot from distance. He was like quite a dynamic offensive player. Mm-hmm. He's gone to the Premier League with Watford. I don't think there's any doubting that he is one of, if not their best player. Mm-hmm. And yet he still gets called out for being lazy. I mean, whether that's because he don't want to be there, I just think personally that fans in the Premier League expect their players to be running about constantly. And, you know, when you have a player who sort of controls and condenses his efforts into little bursts, mm-hmm. you know, it's not really that well received if you're struggling or whatever. So,
I mean,
just interesting the comparison.
I agree. And I think personally, this is obviously a different example than a winger, but a really good center mid doesn't have to touch the ball. And I know that sounds like, what are you talking about? But they can control the midfield and delegate effectively without being on the ball. And I think that's something that is super frowned upon in the Premier League. Like a Jorginho who just gets slandered day in and day out. Granted, there's reasons why that's happening. But I think that's one of them as well is, you know, he's not the full-on hustler that's there everywhere, every corner, like a Kovacic or something. And I realize I'm only using Chelsea players here. That's just what's on my mind, I guess. But there's a lot more to it, is what I'm
saying. Well, that's interesting because you know, Chelsea have a squad that's full of players who used to play in Serie A.
Right.
And obviously they've got a manager who's gone from being successful at Napoli, not winning anything, but being successful in transforming the way Napoli are, top to bottom. And he's gone there, and they're struggling a little bit. Jorginho's not settled in well. Emerson Palmieri's starting to get games, but, you know, he's had patchy form of late. And you look at Higuain, who Sarri admitted after the game yesterday against Everton. Good win for Everton, that as well.
Yeah, it was.
He admitted after the game that Higuain's struggling mentally to adjust and to adapt. So it's just a case of grass isn't always greener. And mm-hmm. There are very few players in world football, I think, who could play in like every single league.
Right.
Who have that skill set.
I think one of the hardest things for players to adapt to when moving to the Premier League is the pressure of playing in the Premier League. Whether you think it's the best league in the world or not, the fact is it's the most televised, the most watched, it has the most media, and therefore the most pressure from pundits, fans, and everyone. So a lot of players that come from leagues that may not get as much viewership like Serie A or La Liga, they get there and they might struggle a bit because they're not used to the eyes. We saw that with Bakayoko, when he went to Chelsea, but he went from being one of the best mids in the world while he was at Monaco to doing god-awful, honestly. And maybe a part of that was the pressure. It took him a while to readapt in Serie A, but he's back and now he's at that form again. So I think there's a lot to be said about playing in the Premier League that does affect a player's performance. It's definitely an interesting dynamic and interesting league.
Matty, just sort of heading back on topic. Susto v Castillejo, who are you starting for the next game? Has Samu done enough to get the nod, or do you stick with Susto regardless of how, shall I say, frustrating he might have been recently?
Who do we play next?
Sampdoria. But on the 30th, Sampdoria. Remember, there's a break.
Yeah, we've got an international break.
Right, right. I start Castillejo.
Really?
What about if you were to shuffle it round and maybe start Çalhanoğlu in midfield, give Paqueta a bit of a rest, because he is flying over to Brazil, isn't he?
He is. That's confirmed. Because I was going to ask about his injury, how serious it was if he gets set out.
I believe he's going. Gattuso didn't mention it, so I assumed that it was just a little pull on the thigh and nothing serious. Otherwise, it'd have been announced by now that he's dropped out. So you could maybe play Çalhanoğlu there to give Paqueta a bit of a rest when he comes back from the international break. Castillejo on the left wing and Suso on the right, maybe?
Or
does Catrone get a game on the wing? I don't know.
Maybe. Or do you play Bakayoko, Biglia, and Frank Kessie in the midfield, and Çalhanoğlu and Castillejo up top with Piątek?
I'd argue probably not enough creativity in that midfield three, but we would absolutely win the midfield battle in terms of physicality.
Right.
Depends, obviously, on the role that Bielia would be asked to play. If he was asked to play an anchor role, then, you know, he'd potentially have a lot of freedom to create, like, more of a natural register, but because, you know, he's got two powerhouses either side of him. The last thing we want is Kessié to be the one who's attacking more and him picking the ball up 20 yards out and shooting wide every time. So, yeah, he's got some interesting decisions to make. At least there are natural choices, and we aren't talking about playing Bertolacci or anything like that. But, yeah, it's...
I don't think any changes will get made, honestly. I think it's too important of a game, you know. We're not out of danger yet.
Yeah.
I think we stick to what we have.
I think I'm with AJ. I think that nothing changes. I think that the players need an international break. I think that they're exhausted from probably from all the hype around them. You know, like, this team has not really had hype around them for some time, because by this point in this season, it's like, all right, let's push for Europa League. Champions League is out of the question. Now it's don't fuck up and drop out of Champions League spot, because if that happens, Bakayoko's gone, you know, and we're going to have to start selling players.
Yeah, things look different.
Right, things look way different. So I think that the team is a little stressed, and rightfully so. And Gattuso has to do his managing thing to make sure that they remain calm and level-headed to be able to finish out the season strong. Something tells me that Gattuso's not the best person to keep someone level-headed, but you never know.
Yeah. Well, I'll actually just come on to that now, because the last thing I was going to mention from Sunday night's game, there seemed to be a little bit of a spat when Kessié got subbed off in place of Conte. Basically, Kessié wasn't happy about being substituted. He didn't really show Conte the sort of encouragement that I think, you know, teammates would expect when they're coming onto the field. Instead, sort of sulked his way off to the bench, and then Bielia took exception to that and said something, and then Kessié responded. There was a, you know, he sort of had to be held back, did Kessié? And then what was really weird is what happened after the game, where Kessié and Bielia were doing an interview in front of the TV cameras, and they were basically back to being best mates again, and they were apologising for things spilling over in the heat of the moment. You know, they were saying that they love each other. It was amazing. But at the same time, Gattuso's in the fucking media room saying, oh, it's not acceptable. This is a double defeat for me. I'm going to have to make sure that I speak to the players. It's a good job that I didn't see the incident. Otherwise, they'd have had to hold me back as well. Again, like, questionable man management, that.
I think that's heat of the moment stuff from Gattuso. He, like you said, he didn't see the incident. He didn't know that they were over it.
Just say you didn't see it.
Yeah.
Then just say you didn't see it, and if fair anything enough comes of it, then you'll deal with it internally. Don't come out and be like, you know, they've shamed the club and the fans and their teammates. Sure. It's like, it's just a...
Me personally...
I know he's fired up.
But I love that kind of emotion. You know, when you're athletes at the top level, you want to win. This is the most important game of the season. You are as hyped up as Gattuso can make you, which is extremely hyped. You're going to behave that way when you feel you have more to offer and you're taken off, and then someone says something. Now, they both apologized and took blame for the situation, which shows how close they are. The fact that Bigley said, hey, I know how he's feeling and I shouldn't have spoke up, you know, I take blame for that. And Kessié said, no, man, I came at you, I shouldn't have done that. It's all good. It's a non-issue.
Then Bielia said, like, oh, no, I'm the older one, you know, I should have, I liked that.
Right, yeah, it's a non-issue. But the fact that there was a kind of emotion... Me personally, I like that stuff. You know, if you've played a sport, you've had tempers flare with your teammates, with your opponents, everyone. We've all kind of been in a situation like that. It's not a big deal, but I think you're right. Gattuso probably should have just left it at, I didn't see it, and we'll discuss it, and we'll handle the situation. I think you're right. That's how it should have been handled. But at the end of the day, me personally, I'm like, cool. You know, like, Kessie's that fired up. He wants to win. That's how important this game is to him. That one little tiny comment from anyone, even a best friend, could set you off. Like that's how important this match was to him. That's cool to me.
And probably, you know, if they are such close friends, like they said, it hurts more coming from somebody like
that. Exactly. Exactly. Like, if you said to me, I'd laugh, whatever, you're nothing. I'm just kidding. But I'm kidding. That was dumb.
And this, I'm sad to announce that this is AJ's last podcast.
I'm moving on to better things.
Yep, Sempre Inter.
Oh, no. Enjoy. They don't like me over there. I'm
the dark
blocked.
Side. Maddie, do you see anything else coming of it? Because I think Gattuso hinted that there's going to be some kind of disciplinary thing about it.
Yeah,
or
I
do
mean,
you think that he'll just come to his senses and just let it go?
Maybe they get a fine. I don't think that, like, anything big is going to come of it. You know, I think that as long as the players realize what they did, then that'll be that. It's a spat between players during a heated game, you know, and that's what happens when your testosterone is going crazy.
Yeah, it's a spat between brothers, you know? I mean, we've all been mad at our siblings before. If there's a fine, it'll be from the league, not the team.
No, it won't be a fine from the league. Yeah.
No, the league's not going to
agree. Nothing's going to come of it.
So, yeah, I hope nothing comes of it, but I also think that this would be perfect Gattuso, or rather typical Milan, for us to be in a good position heading into the closing stages of the season, and then something like this get blown even a little bit out of proportion. You know, Gattuso chooses to make an example of them. One of them gets, you know, Kessié gets dropped for the next game. I don't know. Hopefully none of this happens, but just kind of puts the fear in you a little bit.
That's a good question, though. Like, you mentioned Kessié getting dropped. You know, discipline aside, I like the idea of a midfield of Bakayoko in the holding spot where he's always at, but Çalhanoğlu and Paqueta give us that double creativity.
Mm-hmm.
You guys think that's too much? Or
no. Okay. Yeah, no. I mean, against any half-decent team, we'd be absolutely ripped apart with that midfield. And I think the first half against Inter is case in point. They came into that with no confidence. We played our usual starting midfield three, and we still looked completely overrun. If we play against a half-decent team where we've got one genuine anchor player, but then two who look to operate in the final third and look to create and aren't known for tracking back.
I disagree. I think
it's just a complete fuck-up in the balance, really. You can get away with it against rubbish teams.
Sure, absolutely. But I just you said that, you know, Inter came in with no...
I mean, would you play that against Juve?
Maybe. I mean, I would test it against the smaller teams and see how it performs. I wouldn't try something new against a team like Juve, but I just think Inter's not the team to gauge things against because, as we all know, it's such a toss-up. No matter where you're at, you just get knocked out of Europa League, you lose to fucking Benevento or whatever. None of that matters when it's this derby. This game, I mean, is a whole nother level. It's almost outside of the league itself. I mean, it's so much that they're always going to have confidence. They're going to have drive, determination. They're going to have it all no matter what, both teams. And it just showed that we didn't have it early on. But we showed it even later. We, like you said, we were down two goals twice. And each time we clawed back one, almost got the equalizer late, you know. When we're down 3-1 to any other team, it ends 3-1 or 4-1. We don't come back. But Inter, you want to beat. And Milan, Inter wants to beat. It's one of those things.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, we have not seen this team go down 3-1 yet in 2019.
True.
So
this was our first real test. Yeah. No real adversity.
You know, yeah.
But we have Juve in 2 weeks, so we'll see.
Yeah, yeah. They lost the weekend for the first time all season.
To Genoa, yeah.
So that shows that they're not in.
Sturaro and Pandev. That was funny.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. Sturaro, obviously, ex-Juve, and Pandev, who's about 48.
Yeah.
He's literally
incredible.
I was going
to say my dad's younger.
That's the beauty of Serie A. Yeah. That's the beauty of teams like Genoa. They are capable of these results every now and again. It's weird. Is it still Prandelli who's their head coach?
I have no... I don't think so. It could be. I haven't...
Yeah, Cesare Prandelli. Really? It's Prandelli. And obviously, he's been around for ages, so... Just goes to show that when you've got a coach who's got experience, no matter what kind of squad he's working with, they can occasionally just put one over on someone like Allegri, and that's great. Where were we again? Oh, yeah. Well, I think that personally, you know, you stick with it how it is, what you've tested, midfield of Bakayoko, Kessié, and Paqueta, and just go with it. Assume that Paqueta's not going to be starting for Brazil. I might be wrong there, but I feel like, you know, there's a couple of players that are ahead of him in the pecking order in central midfield, so hopefully he's not too jaded when he comes back, even though it's a long journey. And we hopefully pick up another 3 points against Samp. Right, we'll address the second question. Actually, one more stat that I want to bring up before we move on. That with that win on Sunday night, since the turn of the millennium, so since the year 2000, Inter and Milan have both won 18 derbies each in all competitions. So that goes to show that obviously Inter had that really dominant period from 2005 to 2010 where they won 5 Scudettos in a row. We haven't been that great really since the turn of the millennium. We've been good in the Champions League, but obviously, you know, we played Inter once in the Champions League knockouts, and that was in 2003.
A stat to build off that, since the turn of the decade, 2010, both Inter and Milan have won 9, so half of those 18.
So there you go. So it just goes to show that through all the ups and downs and through what you think is one team's dominant era, etc., derby's the derby. Anything can happen. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm not getting too downhearted about it. I'm only downhearted from a sentimental point of view because I thought that it was a massive chance for us to make a statement to basically the football world. And if we'd have won that, it'd have been like, all right, they are for real. But it wasn't to be. So we'll address the other question then that we got. This came from at United Are Red, who I think is a Man United fan. So it's interesting that he wants to know this. Ideal transfer window for Milan this summer, based on where we are now. I'll start with you, AJ. Go for it.
All right. Well, because this is a United guy, I'm going to say Martial, Pogba, De Gea. No, I'm just kidding. But actually, Martial and Pogba are obviously dream signings, but I don't see that happening. Realistic signings, we definitely get a couple wingers, both left and right. Nicolas Pepe is a name. Alan Saint-Maximin is a name. There's a lot of guys that we're looking at right now. Depay's been thrown around here and there, not recently, but in the past. I think that's going to happen. I think we get a couple more midfielders because Kessie still doesn't get a rest ever. And maybe a defender. You know, if we get Champions League, I don't see why we wouldn't want at least one solid addition in each main position. The only one I don't see us getting is another striker unless it's just Andre Silva returning from loan. I don't think we get another striker. But looking at the market, you know, if we get Champions League and Marcelo goes to Juve like rumored, maybe we make a crazy push for Alexandro or something. You know, we tend to be stealing big players from them, so it's not as crazy a notion as it sounds. But
he's not been great this year, though, Alexandro.
Well, you know, I mean, Rodriguez has been pretty bad this year, too, so whatever.
I don't think Rodriguez has been that bad.
No, I don't think he's been too bad. I think he's just been exactly what we expected, which is probably a slightly above-average fullback.
Well, then maybe I had too high of expectations, because when he signed for us, I thought he was world-class, even though he was struggling at Wolfsburg that previous season.
His attacking output when he came to us from the Bundesliga looked great, but was also slightly skewed by the fact that he was played as a genuine wing-back quite a lot of the time.
True.
He's got a fierce delivery on him. We've seen that a few times. We've seen it for the goal for Pion, the assist for Piontek for the equaliser against Atalanta. We've seen it multiple times. You know, he's got a good delivery on him. He just doesn't really get into those positions that much because we play with both a left back and a left winger. And that just tends to be the way that I'd like to see him overlap more. But also you've got Calabria bombing down the right side and putting in good deliveries, and if not, then it's Conte. And sometimes you just need to have one of your fullbacks who's just a little bit more cautious in their attacking work rate in order to keep a little bit of balance, because the last thing you want is three of their attackers running at, you know, two centre-halves or even one centre-half, and you're completely caught out of position. So
I would like another fullback in each spot, though. You know, I mean, obviously, we got Ibe Conte a pass because he's been injured for, you know, the last, like, almost 80 straight games, but the...
Who has?
Conte. The, like, two or three games that he's played hasn't really looked that great. I mean, there was obviously the red card controversy this last one. When he started against Chievo, he really had a howler there and just not a great game overall. But, like I said, he's been injured so long, so I don't know. Maybe a third right back just in case, depending on what's going on with Abate. I guess there's a lot of variables. It's a better question for later on in the season, personal opinion.
Yeah, Maddy, you go for it. What would you do with the squad this summer?
Who would you sign,
first of all? And then, you know, who do you think shouldn't really be hanging around?
Yeah, I mean, I would sign another right wing because you need someone who's going to compete with Suso to really drive him to compete for that starting position, because right now he's really the only winger that can play on the right side that we have. I think, isn't Castillejo more of a left side player?
I would argue he's more right.
Is he?
It doesn't matter. I mean, he's good with both feet. Just depends if you want him cutting in or if you want him going, you know, to the byline.
Okay. I think we need a left winger because Çalhanoğlu, I think, is better in the midfield than he is on the wing. I don't think he has very much pace. So really having him on the left side is not tactically the best decision that we have played. And another left back, I think that Ricardo Rodriguez, along with Suso, does not have anyone pressuring him for his starting position. So that would definitely be a place to sign. And another attacking creative midfielder like Paqueta. So we can really get those creative juices flowing. I mean, I could tell you De La Feu. I could tell you, I mean, Richarlison would be kind of nice. Oop. He is a little bit of a flop. He, you know, falls down like Brazilians do typically. I mean, I don't...
As an Everton fan, is he worth the kind of 80 million price tag that's being quoted?
No, so not at all.
I'd stay away from him. They're going to want a profit.
So, I mean,
like, they're going to want to sell for like 50 mil plus.
Of course, unless he's like, I want to leave and go to AC Milan. Then they'll be like, all right, well, you know, if he's not going to, you know.
Oh, man. I'm not a fan of his.
I have seen him in the flesh, I think, 5 times. And every single time I've literally been like, what do people see in this guy?
Like, I think he's pretty good. I don't think he's $50 million good.
I mean, if we're talking about Suso drifting in and out of games and people getting frustrated with that, then whew, we could be in for a real treat when Richarlison wraps up at San Siro.
Yeah,
man.
But yeah, I mean, I don't think we need any more holding midfielders until Biglia really starts to age out. I mean, he's, what, 31 now, so he's probably got another two or
like
three seasons. 30,
33. Yeah, he's 33.
Is he 33?
Yeah.
So maybe like another season. So after next season, start to really look for an investment to take his spot. Bonaventura is going to be back next season, so that's basically like another free signing. And he really wears his heart on his sleeve, so that'll be...
Christ, yeah. Forgot about him.
You know, so he'll be a good influence on the pitch. And to be honest, who's he going to start for? Is he going to play on the left wing, or is he going to play in the midfield? Who knows?
Doesn't have to start.
Yeah, I mean, I'd start him over Çalhanoğlu if I could.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, Bonaventura is very much like Çalhanoğlu in the sense that people don't really seem to agree on his best position.
Right.
A lot of people want him to play left wing. A lot of people say he's better as like pushing on as an attacking midfielder. But obviously we've got Paqueta there, mm-hmm. who is going to have that starting spot nailed down purely because of the investment that we made for him and the fact
or
that he's still young and growing.
You know, our Twitter followers tend to think he's more of an attacking player. So maybe put him on the left wing and Bonaventura on the left side of the midfield.
Yeah, and then they could swap over during the game if things were
right.
Things were, and you know, give it a different dynamic. So yeah, what you mentioned, Depay?
I didn't. I said De La Feu.
Oh yeah. Well yeah.
I said Depay.
You say Depay. Yeah, I like him.
I think he'd be a good signing as well.
I think what you know, we arguably already have it with Suso, but not on the same level. We're kind of lacking somebody from the outside, as in the wide areas, who's quick and who's direct and who is a genuine goal threat. Depay is exactly that. You know, when we saw him at PSV, he was ridiculously good. He was in really good form, but obviously it's the Eredivisie, so people take everything with a pinch of salt. He went to United at the wrong time and probably played under the wrong manager in Van Gaal, even though he's Dutch as well. They just were playing some awful football during that period, and no players really flourished under Van Gaal. And then he's moved to Lyon, and once again has basically found his mojo again. And you know, I think he will get a move this summer. I can see Lyon selling one of their big players. Lyon have a really, really good squad, by the way. They've got that Hassem Ouar, who's really good, Nabil Fekir, Memphis Depay, Ferland Mendy, Tanguy Ndombele. They've got a really good squad, and their president recently said that they think they're going to have to sell one of their big players, if not two. So why not go in for Depay? I think he'd be open to the move, want to try himself in a different league. But just looking at the squad, I mean, to answer the question, in terms of overhauls, in terms of exits, there's not, you know, there's the obvious ones that I think Bertolacci will leave. You know, he doesn't seem to be anywhere near. People have forgotten he existed. Jose Mauri will probably leave. One of Strinic and Laxalt will probably leave as well, because they're in a they're at an age where they want to play regular football now, and that's understandable.
I think we give Montolivo a chance again.
Oh, might have to end it here.
Right, that's it. Maddie's been fired. He's been removed.
Joking, of course.
And then, you know, Zapata, we'll see what happens with him. Obviously, we need to renew him. Otherwise, I believe he goes, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. I think he's out of contract. Gattuso said that an offer's on the table, but he hasn't taken it yet, which is weird. If I was him, I'd take it. But you know what? Maybe he actually does want to play. So fair play to him for that if he does. What I'd like to see us sign, I think at left back, we will be okay. Well, starting with goalkeeper, I think Donnarumma and Jose Reyna is fine. They're fine as rotation options. And if I'd loan Plisari out again. If there was ever an injury crisis, I'd make sure that there was a recall clause inserted into that loan. So, you know, if anything ever went wild and we ended up with one goalkeeper, then he could come back. Right back, I think we're fine. Calabria and Conti, that's fine with me. I think you need four centre-backs when you're competing in three competitions with Serie A, Coppa Italia, and hopefully the Champions League, if not the Europa League. So, you know, you're looking at Romagnoli and Musaccio probably being the starting pairing, if not Romagnoli and Caldara, if that works in pre-season. And then if Zapata goes, then I think we need to sign a more experienced centre-half. Somebody who's, I mean, I can't really think of any names off the top of my head. I'd like to see us go back in for Thiago Silva, to be honest.
What?
Why not?
He's old.
Why not? He's 33.
That's old.
He's got a couple of years left in him, and there'd be the romance of him coming back, but you wouldn't expect to start. He's starting every game for PSG.
Would you? Exactly. Do you think he'd give that up? I mean, granted, he loves Milan, but...
I don't know if he's going to be starting every game for PSG next season.
Sure.
I think judging by his interviews, that's what's been made clear to him. Obviously, they've got a couple of young centre-backs that are coming through at PSG. And, you know, if he gets displaced, he's said in the past that he'd absolutely be open to a return. So in terms of somebody there for veteran leadership who's won trophies with the club and would probably accept being sort of a rotation player, why not, man?
I mean, I'd like him in the locker room again, but more as like, maybe like a centre-back coach or something like that once he retires.
People were so up for signing Ibra.
Well, that's because, I mean, he never stops performing.
Yeah, but...
But we also needed a striker. We don't need a centre-back right now.
Zlatan went to the MLS when...
But we needed a striker when he was linked with us. We don't need a centre-back.
We didn't need a striker.
I don't think that we need a feel-good signing right now. Thiago Silva would be a feel-good signing. Mm-hmm. I don't think it'd be a smart signing.
I agree.
So, I mean, if you want to talk about... What do you do, though? Do you go and sign another young player for the future and... You know, like what? It's difficult because I feel like we need the experience. We do need the experience. It would kind of scare me, the idea of us getting somebody like Real Madrid in our Champions League group, for example, and us going into that game with Caldara and Romagnoli as the centre back pair.
I mean, realistically, we want to beat a Real Madrid, regardless. But we did beat them in. That one.
Ajax put four past them. So
with all young players, so why is it scaring you to have established young players?
Not all young players. Boom. I mean, Tadic, who was the star, is 28.
Sure, okay. Well, but we're talking center backs. We got Dalit or whatever, who's 21?
Yeah. I mean, he's amazing. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. He's going to go for big money somewhere. If he goes to Juve, I'll be very jealous of that.
Yeah.
So basically, I'd like to see us sign another centre back with a bit of experience, if it's right. You know, I wouldn't pay astronomical wages. Left back, I think we're okay, as long as I'd like to see Strinic stay. with Rodriguez, but I could also understand those people who say that they want a bit of competition for Rodriguez to push him. But you don't get good fullbacks cheap nowadays. Hopefully redeem Bakayoko. Obviously Kessie sticks around, Paqueta sticks around, Bonaventura sticks around. Bilia, we'll see. I think Bilia will stick around. But I would also like to see us sign another midfielder, but somebody who kind of is a bit of an all-in-one package, so could possibly slip into any of the roles. Alfred Duncan's been mentioned. Diawara from Napoli has been mentioned. I'd like to see that. Rodrigo De Paul from Udinese. Those kind of versatile players would be good for the midfield department. And then, yeah, obviously, you guys have talked about it, wingers. I think we need a couple of wingers. I think we need a direct winger who's a goal threat. Someone like a Nicolas Pepe or a Memphis Depay. And then we need a winger who offers pace and movement to open up defences. Someone like Saint-Maximin could be ideal for that. Absolutely. We've already got enough technically, you know, quote-unquote technically creative players who rely on delivery and stuff like that. We need raw pace and directness, like we've seen from Delafeu, like we've seen from time to time from Castillejo, and like we would see with any of those guys that I mentioned.
I have a kind of question that might be able to out of left field here. Thoughts on replacing Piontek? I don't think he's going to continue incredible form in the next few seasons.
I don't know. Probably going to ignore that question, to be honest.
Okay. All right.
I'll throw it to Maddie. No, I'm not going to ignore that, actually, right? I can see what you said. No. Sorry, it sounds like I'm about to go off on you. I can see exactly what you're saying, because we, you know, I don't want to go back over it because we've discussed it countless times on this podcast before. There is a thing about being a one-season wonder in Serie A.
Mm-hmm.
And we might just be experiencing part of that, because he has only been here since the start of this season. We might be just experiencing that, and he might struggle between now and the end of the season, and all of a sudden Piontek mania is over. We saw him struggle a little bit on Sunday night against a good team and against two very good centre-backs, but hopefully he's backfiring against Sampdoria. It's not a problem that we need to address now, basically. That's what I'm going to say.
Sure.
If he goes on a goal drought for the next couple of months, then we can talk about it again and say, look, is he all that he cracked up to be? But for now, it's one game without a goal. You know, let's leave him to it, man.
But my thought is, if the opportunity arises to sell him for a profit this summer, do we take that and then sign someone that we know is an established striker? Obviously, that backfired with Higuain.
Swap him for Luis Suarez.
I mean, he's 33, but I wouldn't be against it.
There you go.
I like.
No, you don't sell him after just 6 months. You have to give him at least another year.
But if, say, someone comes in with like 60 million or something, we paid 35.
Maybe more than that.
Yeah, I mean, potentially even more. If he beats out Ronaldo this season for goals.
He won't, but
it's
cool that he's even in the race. Like, right. It's good that he's even up there. I think he'll score a few goals, Piontek, between now and the end of the season, and then we'll just see what happens. I mean, you don't know what's going to happen with Juve. If they go deep into the Champions League, then Ronaldo might not be starting
so
many games in Serie A. So we'll see about that. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see, because there was a thing that came out, I think it was Gazzetta dello Sport, was saying that basically Milan's management now value Piontek at like over double what we signed him for.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd take about 80 million for us to seriously consider selling him, even in the summer. If an offer comes along like that, don't get me wrong, you can replace him with a world-class striker,
right.
But this, you don't, Maddie's right, I mean, you don't ship him on after 6 months, not with the way that he's adhered himself to the club and to the fans,
sure.
And you don't end a party at 9 p.m, do you? You know what I mean?
If you're tired.
Or if you're Isaac Muller.
Who will never be on the podcast, beers. By the way.
Never again. No, not even once. Fred will be on again before Isaac, I think. No, it's an interesting question. Because what you're talking about there is completely detaching yourself sentimentally from the situation and looking at it from a pure football economic point of view.
Right.
So, yeah. What's this video you sent me?
It has nothing to do with the podcast. Just ignore this video.
Is not right.
Yeah, no, I just watched it too. It's a baby.
So I assume that it might be something to go.
Yeah, no, it's don't watch that yet.
Right, I'll watch that after. So that's pretty much it in terms of questions. I don't know if you boys have anything to add before we wrap this up. We've gone over an hour.
I don't think I had something earlier, but I can't remember, so no big deal.
Oh yeah, one thing that I want to ask. What do you think about that kit that Inter wore for the game?
So when Barca did it first, the mashup kits, I thought Barca's looked fucking incredible.
Barca's looked amazing.
Inter's looked like
yeah, but they had multiple colors.
Yeah,
Inter was just black and blue. You know?
It was black and blue and loads of like we. It honestly looked like how I imagine you would see it if you were having an epileptic fit.
It's like when you got something in your eye and you just keep blinking and you can't get it out. That's what it looked like. And to be honest, that's how it looked like if we did it too. It's not a good look for us. Don't do it.
Well, you're right. I feel like with Milan, you've probably got a lot of varying thicknesses of the stripes, but the color of red has pretty much remained constant throughout.
Well, not really. I mean, if you look at when we had the St. James Cross on, those were weird colored reds. We had that one that had six different reds on it with Torres. Then we had the one with
that
Baca.
That was the 2014-15 one, And then obviously you've got like the 2011-12 where the stripes were really thin and the red was really bright. Mm-hmm. But then like where do you go after that? I mean, a lot of our kits in the mid-2000s looked pretty much the same.
Sure, I mean, I'm just going like the last 5 years. I'm thinking they're all wild. Like,
do you know what?
Kind of the death of Adidas there. They looked bad.
If there's any graphics designers or graphic designers who listen to this podcast, do what the Inter shirt was, but for us.
Yeah.
I'd kind of like to see how that
looks. Let's see it. There is a guy I follow at Alessio Tackle. He operates Diavolo Designs. If you're listening, I am commissioning you for free, because I won't pay you for this, to make this design for us. And we'll see if it's
hot. I'd
pay,
but like a nominal amount. Like I want to see it, but I'd pay like a quid to see it. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah, a peppercorn, should
I'm
we say?
That, you know, Maddie, any closing thoughts? What do you think about the shirt? Go on.
I thought it was really ugly. I think that it was just ugly. That's all I got.
Like looking in a mirror, Emmett.
Yeah. Sure, but whatever you got to say.
Yeah,
I did not expect that.
Happy birthday, mate. Right. Well, I'll wrap it up there, then, boys. If you've got nothing else to say, feel like a pretty fitting note. But just before we end it here, I want to send a special thank you once again to our sponsors over at Euro Fantasy League. So make sure to check out their website eurofantasyleague.com to join in on all the fun. Yeah, thank you for joining us. It's been a decent episode, over an hour. We'll try to do one, I think, during the international break, but we'll do it a little bit different because we don't have games to recap. What we might do is send out the tweet for the questions a little bit earlier and then just do a user listener questions episode, maybe?
That'd be fun.
Yeah. It's a bit different to the usual straight and narrow game review, game preview, that kind of thing. So that'll be all right. Thank you for listening. I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher or at Kilpin Chronicle if you want a few more expletive Milan-based rants. I've been joined, as per usual, by AJ.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Stuttgart45 for professional and very unprofessional rants, opinions, whatever. It's fun stuff. Check me out. And then we also got Madison.
Yeah, you guys can go ahead and follow me on Twitter at Madison_DT. Yeah. That's about it.
Yeah, nice one. Hope you've had a good birthday episode, mate.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for listening, everybody, and we will catch you next week.
In now from Suso! Brilliant save, but hammered in by Musacchio! He looked nervously at the assistant. But now, Milan pull it back again. Musacchio with a thumping drive.